Tim Wakefield joins us on Sports Byline, knuckleball pitcher for 19 years in the major leagues, first two with Pittsburgh and then 17 years with the Boston Red Sox, and he was 45 years old when he retired and was the longest-serving pitcher for the Red Sox, and he is second in all-time wins at Fenway Park behind Roger Clemens. When you think back on your long career, Tim, does it surprise you that you were able to do what you were able to do for such a long period of time in baseball?
A little bit, it does. But, you know, when you go through the course of a season or a course of a career, especially for me, I was in survival mode from day one. So to be able to relax a little bit and look back on my career, especially the last 17 with the Boston Red Sox, and be mentioned just in the same company as Cy Young and Roger Clemens is truly amazing. It makes me scratch my head and go, wow, did I really do what they're saying that I did?
I have a quote here in front of me. You said, I just want to be able to say I tried everything I could to make it. And that tells me an awful lot about how important baseball was to you.
Yeah, that was a sport that I knew I wanted to play even at a young age. You know, I remember when I was 5 years old is dreaming of being a knuckleball pitcher. And, you know, I used to drive my sister crazy practicing my autograph in elementary school. She's like, you're crazy. You're never going to be famous. And I, whether it was subconscious or not, but, you know, being able to pitch in the big leagues, I felt very blessed. I was in the right place at the right time after almost being out of baseball three times, you know, and the knuckleball found me and resurrected my whole life.
What was it about the knuckleball that captured you so early in your life then, Tim?
Well, it's something that I learned. I had in my back pocket. I never really considered myself a knuckleball pitcher. I pitched a little bit in high school, but when I got to college, I was, you know, I played first base and I wanted to hit homers. And, you know, was drafted as a home run hitting first baseman. But, obviously my career wasn't going to last very long until I converted to a knuckleball pitcher.
What was it that the scout told you that made you think, hey, wait a minute, maybe I ought to switch positions?
The fact that he told me that they were going to release me at the end of the year, but they wanted to bring me into spring training and convert me into instructional league and turn me into a knuckleball pitcher.
You know, it's interesting because other players, of course, have transitioned to other positions. What is the mental process of going from being a position player to being a pitcher?
I don't know if there was a mental process for me. It was either do that or go home and find a job. And so I really didn't have a choice in the matter. And I had a little bit of pitching experience when I was in high school. So the conversion wasn't that tough for me to switch from a position player to a pitcher.
But being able to get your hands around and really kind of, I want to say, control a knuckleball, which you don't really do control, but being able to get that so it's an effective pitch at a high degree of competition, I would think would take some type of getting used to in some way.
Yeah, I mean, it took a full commitment and sacrifice for me to accept the fact that I wasn't going to be hitting anymore, and to really, you know, focus on what I needed to do to survive, and that was throw knuckleballs. And whether it was playing catch every single day or getting a buddy of mine to play catch with, or even finding a wall in the outfield in the minor leagues or in spring training, is just throw up against the wall and experiment with different grips and feel how the ball came out of my hand and what worked best for me, and embrace my own personality with the pitch that I was trying to throw.
After being in the minors with Pittsburgh, you made your debut in 1992. Tell me about that game against the Cards.
Oh, I was scared to death. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was excited to finally get the call. You know, called home, told mom and dad they were there to watch me pitch, and to be honest with you, when the game was over with, I didn't realize that it was already the ninth inning. It was just, I had the blinders on and was just trying to get as many outs as possible before Jim Leland came and got me. But he let me finish the game, and I was able to come away with a 3-2 victory.
Yeah, it was a complete game. You struck out 10, and you threw 146 pitches. What did your arm feel like after that game?
I don't remember. It's hurt many times after that, so I don't remember if I maybe the adrenaline rush had taken over and I didn't feel a thing.
You know, Tim, you were very, very helpful to the Pittsburgh Pirates down the stretch for the playoff-bound Pirates that year. You started 13 games. You had an 8-1 record with a 2.15 ERA. Now, that indicates to me that either you were just playing dumb about being up there or you weren't intimidated in any way. Which was it?
That's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I definitely was intimidated about being up there, but I was surrounded by a bunch of good teammates and a bunch of good coaches that kind of you know, walked me through the whole scenario of what it was like to be a big leaguer. I know Andy Van Slyke was a big part in taking me under his wing and teaching me the ins and outs of being in the major league. But, you know, definitely the stage is much bigger there. The lights are much brighter, and it was just something that I needed to get accustomed to, and I had a lot of help.
You know, mentoring is an important part of the game, and you mentioned about the ins and outs of being in the major leagues. How is that defined? What are the little nuances of those ins and outs?
More or less knowing how to act and how to interact with the media and how to act around veteran players and kind of like knowing my place. It's like being a freshman in high school and dealing with a bunch of seniors. You kind of got to know your place and how to handle and how to act the right way.
That first time up, you go to the playoffs with the Pirates. They get to the National League Championship Series against Atlanta, and you had good luck there as well. Now, it's one thing to pitch during the regular season, but you know what it's like. It goes up a different level when you get into the playoffs, and particularly in the NLCS. What was that like for you?
Well, it was an eye-opening experience for me. You know, after kind of getting my feet wet and during the last month and a half of the regular season, and then being thrust into the spotlight of the postseason, where the media outpouring was like triple or quadruple of what it was during the regular season, and you know, it was an eye-opening experience, and it was definitely more magnified than I expected it to be. But you know, I tried to stay as grounded as possible and be truthful with everybody, and just go out and know that if I did my best, that's all I could do, and I was lucky enough to come away with two victories in that NLCS against Atlanta.
And the Pirates end up losing that NLCS to Atlanta. 93 and 94 were interesting years, and it brings to mind something that Joe Morgan, the Hall of Famer, said to me. He said, Ron, he said, when you go 3-for-3, you better remember when you went 0-for-3. And what he's basically telling me, Tim, is keeping things balanced and in perspective. After you went through 93 and 94, tell me a little bit what that was like for you, especially after you had the success that you had had in 92 with the Pirates.
Yeah, it was difficult. You know, I was 93, started off the season as the opening day starter, and I walked 10, but I won 3-2. And, you know, they came to me and said, hey, you can't keep pitching like that and walk 10 batters in a 9-inning game and expect to win every time you go out. So, obviously, now the pink elephant is in the room. And, you know, going out there trying to compete, thinking, you know, to myself, I can't walk anybody. I started pitching defensively and eventually found myself back in the minor leagues. And, you know, it was a growing period for me. Never having to learn how to fail, I think, is the biggest key, the biggest lesson that I learned. You know, being in the big leagues and only losing one game that year, I didn't know how to handle failure for the first time in my life. And you know, it took a very humbling experience for me to get sent down to the minor leagues and work it out.
You know, one of the things that happens when somebody has great success early and quickly, like you did, and then they struggle after that, they tend to label you flash in the pan. Did you have to deal with that from the media?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was called every name in the book, from flash in the pan to you name it. And that was tough to get over. But I wanted to persevere through the negative comments that I was hearing. You know, I was getting booed out of every stadium in the minor leagues after being so successful in 92. And, you know, it was kind of like I wanted to prove everybody wrong, and that's kind of like how I survived my 19-year career, is like the doubt of being a knuckleball pitcher, that nobody trusted it and nobody liked it, and it was a kind of an oddity or uniqueness or a freak pitch or a circus pitch that, you know, I had set in my mind that I was going to prove everybody wrong and get back to the big leagues and be successful.
You know, Tim, you bring up a very interesting point. I've heard many times from athletes across the board in pro sports that the fear of failure is a great motivating factor.
It is.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, the fear of failure is a great motivating factor because, you know, you put it in your mind that, you know, failing is not an option. That you're so afraid to fail that you elevate your performance on different levels, and you know, that was definitely not the major motivating factor for me, but more of a learning experience that I didn't want to go through those failures again, and I knew how to handle it if I did.
And what was your reaction when they released you in '95 then?
Well, I figured that my career was over with, and you know, that drive home back to Melbourne, Florida, from Bradenton was, you know, a 3-hour drive of, you know, kind of a surreal feeling that I guess, you know, my dreams were over with, and I was going to be heading back home and finding a job somewhere. But, you know, I was lucky that I got a phone call 2 days later from Dan Duquette, and then they offered me a minor league deal to play with the Boston Red Sox.
And Tim Wakefield's career was not over with. He goes and signs with the Boston Red Sox. We'll talk about that aspect of his career and also about a movie about his career. We'll do all of that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline.